Okay, so the title is Security Challenges in Virtualized Environments. And basically, I'm going to talk about three things today. It's going to be virtualization-based malware. It's going to be, well, how to use virtual machine for providing isolation. And the last thing would be nested virtualization and its implication on security and not only security. So let's start with virtualization-based malware. So the idea is very simple. Probably all of you know it already. So we have operating system and hardware, and the idea is to sleep malware in between. And to do this effectively, we use AMD V or Intel VTX hardware-based extensions for virtualization. So the key points about Blue Pill proof of concept that I presented some 2 years ago were those. First, no hooks, which means that cannot be detected using even a perfect integrity scanner, because simply the operating system nor any other programs were not modified. On-the-fly installation, meaning no boot, BIOS, and other modifications necessary. Another thing was that virtualization-based malware do not virtualize I/O, which means there is negligible performance impact, which means that if you had your 3D graphics card that worked before, after you install Blue Pill, it's still works fine. Well, the same as it was before. So after I presented Blue Pill 2 years ago, there were like many people who were discussing Blue Pill detection. However, before we look at this, I would like to make a distinction between detecting a VMM, and the word A is a keyword here, which means detecting that we are virtualized by somebody. If I was speaking in Polish, I would use the word jakiś. Virtualization. It's very important. And the other approach is detecting that the actual VMM that is above us is actually malicious. So all of the Blue Pill detection methods that were presented recently or during the first year after Blue Pill presentation, they all were targeting VMM detection, a VMM detection. They were using various tricks and hacks to do this, timing analysis, HPAT timers, CPU-specific behavior, because if we are virtualized, maybe some very specific CPU instructions behave subtly different. TLB profiling, another interesting thing. At Black Hat 2007 last year, myself and Alex Tereshkin, who works with me, we showed that most of them can be actually somehow prevented or cheated. However, this is all not important, because this is all about detecting some virtual machine. And these days, we are very quickly approaching the world where everything is going to be virtualized. Today, on server side, everything is it's pretty much virtualized these days. And in the coming 2-3 years, we probably will have the very same situation on desktops. So if everything is virtualized, then the information that, you're running inside a virtual machine is pretty much useless, because, well, I can say, well, yes, of course I'm running inside a virtual machine because I have Xen or VMware or whatever above me. So it's pretty much meaningless information. What I would like to have is, you are running under Xen, which runs under Blue Pill hypervisor. That would be interesting. Just an information that we have some virtual machine above us is pretty much useless, if we assume that everything is virtualized. So detecting virtualized malware, on the other hand, is a bit more tricky. Well, we have two approaches, of course. We can search for code or detect activity, the most two straightforward. So detect activity is, somebody can say, okay, maybe we are very stealthy, maybe we cannot be detected from the host. However, we still introduce some network communication. However, if we use those two approaches very quite commonly used these days, stealth by design concept and cover channels, we are pretty much done with this. Especially cover channels are very powerful because, in theory, they can't be detected. So the theory is the lower bandwidth we use, the harder it is to detect. In practical scenarios, I can't really imagine detecting hard cover channels. On the other hand, we have code searching, which is on the host. And here we can use either by pattern searching or heuristics. So Let's consider two scenarios. Scenario number one, we use our virtualized base malware in a targeted scenario, so which means that the malware is 0 day, which means that the antivirus companies do not have samples, do not have signatures, which means the very simple obfuscation by just obfuscating the VM instructions, like VM run obfuscation, which is trivial, they won't work by definition. On the other hand, heuristics can also be defeated very easily by using those encryption of VM instructions. Pattern searching and heuristics can also be very easily detected in case of massive scenario if we use nested page tables, which is a new feature of new AMD processors and also upcoming feature of Intel processors, which basically means hardware shadow page tables, which basically means hardware-based I/O virtualization. So the whole big point about virtualization-based malware is there are no hooks in the system. And this is important because it means that integrity scanners cannot work. So only we have this pattern searching or heuristics, but we cannot have an integrity scanner. So we cannot imagine Microsoft using their PatchGuard. No matter how fine-grained it could be, it couldn't detect this because there are no hooks. So let's talk about blue pill prevention now. Obviously, the very first thing that people started discussing as a prevention of virtualization-based malware was how about to disable virtualization? But if we follow this reasoning, then we can ask ourselves a question. So how about also disabling our network card so we never get infected from the internet? Or maybe not turning on our computer any time. So this is not a good way. We do not protect something by just disabling it. We want something better. So here's the idea that also was raised, that is to install a trusted hypervisor first. And the word trusted is a keyword here. So installing a trusted hypervisor, we can achieve it today using two different approaches. One is static root of trust, and the other one is dynamic root of trust. The static root of trust is something quite simple to understand. It's this trusted chain of trust, which starts at the very, very beginning, even before BIOS, some TPM initialization code, which then measures the BIOS. BIOS measures master boot record, which measures OS loader, etc., etc. Because we use TPM, the trusted platform module, in this process, we make sure that only if all those measurements, a measurement is just a hash of the code, like SHA1. So only if all those measurements were correct, only then, at the very end of this chain, the TPM will provide us with the valid key to decrypt, well, the rest of the hard disk, for example. Because the key is sealed in TPM. Very straightforward. Dynamic root of trust, on the other hand, is something that new AMD and Intel processors support. And this is called Intel Trusted Execution Technology on Intel and Secure Virtual Machines on AMD, and SKINIT on AMD, SVM. And these are very surprising features. Those two instructions, SCENTER and SKINIT, can provide us with something. They basically provide us with this. We execute this instruction as enter, for example. We specify a block of memory, an address, a physical block of memory, and this instruction makes sure to load this memory into some memory area to protect it, for example, against DMA accesses, and to securely initialize processor, which basically means to do the processor restart, and then to start executing this code. This is very surprising because this instruction guarantees to execute our code, our block of code, in a potentially unsecured system, in a potentially compromised system, in a safe way. So it's sort of like starting a program, but it assures that this program, even though it was started in a potentially compromised system, it would still be executed correctly. So the code would not be modified, etc. At the very moment of the start of the execution. It's It's worth noting that both of those approaches only ensure that what we load is trusted, but only at the very moment of loading. It means that 3 seconds later, it could be compromised. For example, exploited. Some buffer overflow could be exploited there. And then it wouldn't be trusted anymore. However, at the very moment of loading, it is trusted. Okay, trusted versus secure. So trusted in this context means only that it is known, not compromised. It is this very code that I expect there to be. This very code from Xen, from VMware, from whatever, from Microsoft. Secure, on the other hand, in this context would mean there are no bugs in the code that could be exploited to later modify the code. A simple example, the famous DMA problem. So we have operating system, we have a hypervisor here, type 1 hypervisor. So this could be Xen, this could be ESX by VMware, or maybe Microsoft Hyper-V, whatever. And we have hardware. So let's imagine that we would like to allow some of the devices to be accessed directly from the operating system. For example, the graphics card is a good example. If you want to virtualize desktops, we want to usually allow what we call it PCI pass-through for the graphics card for the performance. So we don't want to intercept it. So you want to allow some driver in the operating system to talk directly to some device, graphics card driver. And the reasoning here is that the driver, okay, it can access the device, can do IO to device, so in, out, and writing to MMIO mapped memory from the device. However, it is still running in unprivileged memory or address space, which means it cannot access the hypervisor. So it seems secure, but of course it's not, because the driver can ask the graphics card driver DMA engine, because pretty much any device, pretty much any PCI device or hypertransport device have an integrated DMA engine. A DMA engine is just a little, not cheap, just a little engine that can take a request, and the request could be, please do the memory transfer from this system physical address to this system physical address. So we can set up such a transfer by talking to device-specific registers and ask it to make a memory transfer and override some physical memory, which just happens to be occupied by the hypervisor. This is a very popular problem, and pretty much anybody who deals with virtualization these days know it very well. And of course, to solve it, we have IOMMU, or VTD on Intel, and this is a solution to this problem. It works by having a special MMU unit on the NordBridge, which can be used to translate and protect physical memory addresses for requests originating from PCI bus or hypertransfer bus. VTD is available these days. I bought Intel Core 2 Duo with Intel motherboard a few months ago, and it already supports VTD. On AMD, it's still, as far as I know, not available in shops. But it's coming. The interesting conclusion here is it's not possible to have thin hypervisors with proper protection without IOMMU. So if anybody tells you these days that they have very thin hypervisor that they could be used to do, I don't know, monitoring of viruses, if they say it works on current architecture, it's not true. Because without VTD or IOMMU, we cannot do this. It's always not secure in that case. Because of course, all the other hypervisors like Xen, VMware, ESX, etc., they are not thin, because they virtualize all the IO. If we virtualize all the IO, then it's not a problem, because then we know whether the driver wants to set up a DMA transfer or not, and we can allow it or not. And we do the DMA translation between guest physical address and system physical address. Other problems coming soon. So the conclusion of this part is it's not trivial to have a trusted and secure hypervisor, but for sure this is the proper way to protect your system from virtualization-based malware. This is the proper way, not some tricky hacks that try to do some time measurements of some instruction somewhere, do some correlation within TLB pattern before and after. This all doesn't work because we can have more than one hypervisor, and this is something I'm gonna talk about later. Okay, so that was about just a few words about virtualization-based malware. So let's talk about using virtual machines for isolation. Well, originally isolation was supposed to be provided by operating systems. So we have those notion of separate processes and address spaces. And also we have those different user accounts and ACLs. So theoretically, we have had isolation since the very like 70s or 80s, where we had Unixes for the first time. But the problem is that current operating systems simply fail at providing this isolation. So why they fail? They fail because we have kernel bugs, and also because we have kernel bugs, and because we have kernel bugs. This is really a problem because current operating systems have huge kernels. If you look at, and I'm not only talking about the core kernel, I'm talking about all the drivers that are executing inside the kernel, in Vista, macOS, Linux. There are like hundreds of drivers. Maybe in case of Linux, maybe just tens of drivers. They usually are from third-party vendors, and this is something we can hardly control, because the new hardware is coming every week or every month. So it's not really possible to have proper quality assurance. It's not really possible to have some five best C coders in the world sat down and audit all our drivers. It's not possible because the new drivers are coming all the time. This is something that is very, very large and have very short time of life. So this is a problem. There's a problem because in all the customer general purpose operating systems like Windows, Linux, macOS, all those drivers are at the very same privilege level as the kernel. So the compromise of any of them means the compromise of the whole kernel. And some of you who are Mac lovers might argue with me that Mac has this, macOS 10 has this microkernel architecture. Yeah, it is true. It has an architecture which is based on microkernel. However, still the drivers, the BSD subsystem and all the drivers, they all execute at ring zero, which means from the privilege point of view, this is a monolithic architecture, which is a pity, because I also like Apple. So kernel bugs are, this is the biggest problem, and also we have bad design, some stupid problems. For example, on Windows XP, we have this everything runs as administrator role, which is extremely stupid. And even on Vista, with the introduction of this user account control, which seemed to be an effort from Microsoft to change this situation, all runs as administrator, they failed because they did some stupid mistakes. The one that I consider the most stupid is that UEC assumes that every installer, every setup program, so the stupid Tetris installer, they always need to get full administrator rights. Which means that you want to install the calculator, I don't know, weather gadget or whatever. Whenever Vista detects that this is a setup program, it displays this prompt which says, you're about to run a setup program. Do you want to grant administrator access to it or not? And of course, if you choose no, then it won't install. So everybody needs to choose yes. But this is so stupid because most programs do not require full administrator privileges to be installed correctly. Most programs, like 90% of them, I would just say, they only require what? If we are on Windows, they only would require ability to add directory in C program files, an ability to add registry key in HKLM software, registry key. That's all. not even modify the other directories there, just append, right? Why would we give the full administrator rights to a Tetris installer? Why would we want Tetris to be able to completely own our machine? So these are some most important things behind behind a message that current operating systems do not provide proper isolation. So maybe we can use virtualization for the rescue. And here's the idea. It's nothing new. So the idea is we have a trusted and secure hypervisor, which creates several virtual machines. Of course, this is very effective. There are thin. This is a thin hypervisor, hardware virtualization. So they all execute near native speed. So we have Vista. Maybe we use Vista for our work projects. Then we have a small Linux-based virtual machine with Firefox that maybe we use for some random surfing on the internet. And maybe we have another machine, which is also Linux plus Firefox maybe, which we use for online banking. And maybe we have some other operating system which we use for something else, maybe for our home pictures. And the idea is that we can have this all on our laptop and we can press some magic key and just switch between them, just like today we switch between processes. And of course the idea is that because this is a trusted and secure hypervisor, then this isolation is, like, it's not possible to escape from one machine and compromise the other one. So if we use this to go to some Russian cracking sites, and if we got compromised, nothing happens to our online banking virtual machine. Okay, so of course the challenge to implement it is first the performance, because we want near native speed. All the current virtual machine implementations, they do not provide it. So for example, on my laptop I use Mac OS X, and then I, for my random browsing, I use VMware Fusion, and I host, and I, as a guest, I use Ubuntu, and on this Ubuntu I have Firefox, and I use this virtual machine to do some most of my browsing. But this is really, it's really not a good performance. For example, when this machine is idle, like just Google is displayed, whatever, it consumes 10% of my CPU. This is really a lot. If I'm running on batteries only, this is really a lot. Plus, it's all very huge. Plus, we have this most important question, is why would this picture be more secure than what we have today with classic operating systems? Because in this previous picture, if we replaced the word hypervisor with the word kernel, we would get what we have today. We have kernel and we have multiple processes. They were supposed to be isolated, but they are not. We know this today. So the question is, why would this picture with hypervisor be more secure than what we have today with kernels? There is a belief that it's much more difficult to escape from a virtual machine than to do a privilege escalation attack from process to kernel. But is it really that VMMs are so flawless today? Well, they are not. I'll just show you a few examples of bugs that I compiled a few months ago, were publicly disclosed bugs. They are either in hypervisor or in additional infrastructure. A bug an example of a bug in additional infrastructure would be, for example, this bug in VMware Workstation shared folders path traversal that was reported a few months ago. That is a bug in additional infrastructure because shared folders are not necessarily to run it. It's not inside the hypervisor. It's just something additional. Bugs in the hypervisor are the most interesting, or in the core virtualization components, because we cannot basically get rid of this and we always are exposed to them. So here are some examples. In September 2007, Rafał Wojciuk found a bug in ESX 301. It's interesting that VMware often claims that ESX is one of the product, is a product that never has got any bug, a security bug. However, if you go to this VMware.com address, you will read that VMware by themselves admitted that this bug is potentially exploitable. And it is in ESX 301. Another bug also found by Rafał Microsoft Virtual Server 2005 R2, heap-based buffer overflow allows guest OS to execute arbitrary code on the host OS. Zen 303, Joris van Randwijk. This one was not really in hypervisor, it was in a pgroup. Pgroup is a component used by domain zero to start the other domains, and if we crafted a grub.conf in one of the unprivileged domains and rebooted it, then we could get arbitrary command execution on domain zero, which pretty much means execution inside hypervisor as well. And also 1 year ago, Tavi Saramande from Google wrote a paper about his results in fuzzing several of the, most of the virtualization products, VMware Zen, Virtual PC, Parallels. And he just wrote a simple fuzzer for instructions and IO accesses, and he found out and that most of those hypervisors crashed when running those fuzzers. Fuzzing means that he, for example, created various strange-looking instructions and tried to execute them. And of course, hypervisor intercepted some of those instructions, and because they were so unusual, it crashed. Czy mogę dostać trochę wody? Tylko mam prośbę, nie zimnej, nie gazowanej. Dziękuję. Przepraszam, ale już tracę głos. Okay, so let's continue with this. As I said, these are just five examples, five publicly disclosed bugs a few months ago. Nothing really that fancy, but it shows you that current VMMs are really far from being flawless. It's not really that if we have something inside virtual machine, that means it's not possible to escape from it. So the message from here is that in order to succeed with this transition, in order to succeed with having this picture of a hypervisor and those several domains, to make it something more than what we have today, we need to make sure that our hypervisors are really thin and small. Otherwise, we would get back to the very same situation we have today with current operating systems and kernels. We would just replace the word hypervisor with the word kernel. So, just one example of upcoming product that's hopefully gonna use this approach, the Phoenix Hyperspace. This is the marketing picture I got from them. So we have a secure BIOS which starts a hypercore hypervisor early in the boot process, which is built using all these virtualization extensions from AMD or Intel, VTA or Intel. And then this hypercore creates, well, in this first release, we're gonna have three virtual machines, Windows, Vista, another one Linux-based, which gonna host some few applications, and managed space, which can host, for example, your favorite antivirus engine to do some scanning of Vista, whatever. And the user experience is, as I said, we press some magic, like F4 or whatever, and we switch immediately to a virtual machine, which you see here. The cool thing here is that you can still see the Vista in the background, so it's like transparent. And you have some applications here now, like web browser. And of course, in the future, you could have more than one additional virtual machine, and you can use one of it to do online banking, and yet another one to do something else. So the whole idea here is that the hypercore, which is the type one hypervisor for hyperspace, is secure. This is the simplified picture of how it looks. The whole hyperspace. So you have this hypercore thin hypervisor, we have this main Vista, and in another app spaces VMs, we have one domain zero, which might or might not be managed space. And also we have a separate domain to keep drivers. I also wrote device model virtualizer, which basically means QMU. In the future, hopefully something else. That's not necessarily gonna be hosted in the separate domain. It might be hosted in something which is called stub domain. This is something that Zen is coming up in Zen 3.3. So we can have device model virtualizer in additional domain here. There are some security implications of those two approaches, which I don't want to get into right now. And the other point is to allow pass-through for many devices, for example, graphics card. So whenever we work on Vista, we would like to allow Vista to talk directly to 3D graphics cards so that we have all those new 3D effects in Vista still available. So there are some challenges in doing this. Maybe before I talk about challenges, some characteristics of this system. So first, it targets desktop and laptop systems, which is different from most other hype virtualization solutions like Xen or Hyper-V or ESX, which are for servers. So the desktop systems have different requirements, and the graphics is one of the biggest difference. So if today you try to use Xen to do this kind of virtualization, the graphics is really disappointing, the graphics performance. Also because we consider laptops and mobile devices, another important thing is ACPI support. So probably you want Vista to think that ACPI is a power management standard. So we want to allow Vista to make sure to think that it manages power. So for example, to display the correct battery level, etc. However, we don't want allow Vista to shut down or to put the system to sleep if we are running on a different virtual machine. So we need to virtualize ACPIs. And also, we want to make sure this is somehow secure, so you want to assure integrity of loading this hypervisor. And this is done here by static root of trust for static root of trust measurement. And this is easy because Phoenix, who is a producer of this, is a BIOS maker, so they can put it into the trusted chain right at the beginning. To speed things up, they use pass-through for most devices. There are some tricks here that I don't want to get in. Power management, as I said, ACPI virtualization, efficient intercepts for power management control so that Vista doesn't shut down the system. Integrity, as I said, SRTM. They optionally use DRTM as well, which is not really important here. Another interesting thing is SMM-based watchdog for HyperCore code. So they have something like PatchGuard from Microsoft, but they have it in SMM, system management mode, and temporarily checks hypervisor code whether it was subverted or not. More on this at Black Hat this year. This is the picture. So this is an example how virtualization could be used potentially to improve security on desktop systems by providing better isolation than we have today. Today we don't have pretty much any isolation. Let me now talk about the last subject for today. This is the nested virtualization. This is pretty new research. I presented it for the first time last month at the RSA conference in San Francisco. So I think it's pretty new thing. So the one of the reasons to think about nested virtualization would be to consider this scenario. Assume we have this desktop virtualization, like from Phoenix, this hyperspace thing. And so we have this Vista that is already virtualized. So let's consider a scenario when a user would like to use virtual PC or VMware workstation inside this Vista. So we bought this new laptop from some Lenovo or whatever, and it already comes with Phoenix hypervisor, but we still would like to use our virtualization machines, virtualization-based programs. But how come? There's already one hypervisor installed here. So there's a problem, because if you run virtual PC here, it cannot install its own hypervisor, because there can only be one hardware-based hypervisor. So this is the picture we would like to have. So hypervisor, some virtual machines, and one of these virtual machines would like to become a hypervisor for some others, and maybe we would like to continue it even further. So this is the idea how to handle it. This is the situation we have, but we know that the processor cannot support it. So we would like to transform it into a flat scenario. So this is the idea. So now let's look at the actual details. And let's start with AMDV. And I want to warn you that the next 14 slides are going to be deep technical. I debated whether I should use those slides for today's keynote, but the organizers really wanted me to do this. So even though this is a keynote, this is going to be quite technical. If you get lost, don't worry. It's not really that important to get the main message. Okay, so how do we do nested virtualization, hardware-based? This is the standard picture of how hardware-based virtualization looks. Nothing really magic here. We have hypervisor running, and hypervisor decides to create a virtual machine or to resume the one that was created before. So it uses VMCB, which stands for Virtual Machine Control Block, which holds some, for example, the guest state of the virtual machine, and also the control state, which controls, for example, whether the virtual machine is being intercepted. So if we can say that on every CR3 access, we should intercept the virtual machine and the processor should get back to the hypervisor. So we use VMRun to execute, create or resume the virtual machine. We specify VMCB address, a physical address of VMCB in RIX, and the processor switches to the virtual machine and executes virtual machine. And this happens until an intercept occurs. For example, read MSR, which tries to access an MSR register, usually is intercepted by hypervisors. So it's a good example of something that generates an intercept. So we have read MSR executed, which means that the processor stops or suspends the virtual machine execution and transfers control back to the hypervisor. And now we do something in the hypervisor. We usually look at the VMCB, at a field in a VMCB that is called exit code. So we know what was the reason for the exit. This is called VM exit. We do something. We emulate something or we fix something, and we use VMRun usually again to resume this virtual machine executed again. This is all standard picture. So now the situation is this. We have hypervisor. The hypervisor executed a virtual machine. And now this virtual machine wants to execute a VMRun instruction by itself. So it wants to create its own virtual machine. So what happens now? Of course, if we execute VMRun in a guest, the processor would cause an intercept, which means we would get back to the hypervisor, which would realize that one of its guests just executed VMRun instructions. So now the hypervisor needs to somehow emulate it for it. And how do we emulate it? So the guest specified its own VMCB control block for its own virtual machine. Let's call it VMCB1. So the first thing we do in this code here, we copy VMCB1 to VMCB1 prim, which is almost the same as VMCB1. However, it has a few fields is modified. For example, I'm gonna get to this later. I don't want to go ahead. So we just modify a few things, but so far, you think VMCB1 is basically the same as VMCB1. And then we execute VMRun on behalf of this nested guest. Or I should call it nested hypervisor now, because this is the hypervisor, this is nested hypervisor. And now we execute a guest, a virtual machine, or we create a virtual machine on behalf of the nested hypervisor. This is what I'm going to call a nested guest. One thing that we need to modify here is the intercept bitmap. So, for example, we want to intercept some events, for example, all readMSR accesses. So imagine that this nested hypervisor doesn't want to do this. So maybe it didn't indicate in VMCB1 that it want to intercept those events. But we still need to set them in VMCB1 prim so that we don't get so we get all the same intercepts. So we don't lose them. So we basically set VMCB1 prim bitmap for intercepts as a sum of subsets of this and this, a union of those two intercepts. Okay, and we execute the virtual machine here. I intentionally draw this a little bit below this virtual machine to somehow suggest it's a guest of this one. However, it is not. In fact, those two virtual machines are just peers, and that they are at the same level, and they are just guests of this hypervisor. However, from this virtual machine, the picture looks like now. So it looks like there was a hypervisor. It executed VM run, which then executed inside its own virtual machine another VM run, and then another guest was created. So we emulated the nested scenario. So now the question is, what happens when we have an intercept in this nested guest? This is repeated. So we have this nested hypervisor and nested guest, and now the nested guest does something that causes an intercept. Obviously, the processor will transfer the control back to the hypervisor, which will now realize that there was an intercept inside this nested guest. And it will copy the VMCB1 prim onto VMCB1. More specifically, it would copy some of the fields that was just modified in VMCB1. For example, the exit code field is an example of a field that should be copied from VMCB1 prim onto VMCB1, so that the nested hypervisor has an illusion that it executed this virtual machine. Because if it executed it, if it was the only hypervisor, if it executed this VMCB1 natively, the processor would write the exit code into VMCB1. In our example, it writes it into VMCB1 prim. So we need to make sure we copy it. And there are like five other fields that we should copy this way, the same way. And then we execute VM run using VMCB0, the original one that we used to execute nested hypervisor. We execute VM run, we resume the nested hypervisor, and also before doing this, we set RIX register for this nested hypervisor to point to VMCB1. And that's all. And the illusion looking from the nested hypervisor is just this. It was executing, it executed VM run, it executed its guest, the guest was intercepted, and we got control, just like it should be. It looks convincing, but it won't work. The reason it won't work, or usually it won't work, is that we have something that is called GIF bit, which stands for global interrupt flag, which is something like an interrupt flag, but it's more global, which means the GIF was introduced with the introduction of SVM extensions, and this is something that the hypervisor can clear in order to make sure that nothing will interrupt the hypervisor. So the processor, whenever the processor enters the hypervisor, so we have a VM exit, the processor automatically clears GIF bit so that the hypervisor can do something uninterrupted. And usually at some point the hypervisor, when it's ready, sets GIF to 1, enables GIF, and then it can serve interrupts. For example, SMI is an example that could be disabled by GIF. And also the processor automatically enables GIF whenever we whenever we have VM entry, so whenever we execute VM run. So this is the standard picture. We have GIF1 in the guest and GIF0 at the beginning of the hypervisor. And this is the situation in our case. We have the nested guest, which causes an intercept. We get back to the hypervisor, which then executes VM run to resume the guest. However, this means that this nested hypervisor will start running with GIF set to 1, or will be resumed to serve the intercept from the guest with GIF set to 1. However, this hypervisor thinks that it is the only one hypervisor and expects GIF to be cleared at this very point when we get back from the guest. And here the situation is different. This has the side effect of, for example, more complex hypervisors like virtual PC crashing at the very few instructions here, just because the hypervisor was not ready to serve some interrupts. For example, VPC didn't have IDT at this point, so we got a crash. So we need to somehow emulate GIF being 0 for the nested hypervisor. But this is not really that trivial because we cannot just set GIF to 1 before executing VM run, because the processor automatically set to 0, because the processor automatically clears GIF upon VM entry. This is what I just said. So to get around it, we need to emulate this GIF 0 semantics. We stop the simulation whenever the hypervisor executes STGI, which is something that sets GIF to 1, or whenever the nested hypervisor executes VMRun. So how do we emulate it? Well, we emulate it this way. We set VMCB1 pre-int masking field to 1 if it's not set already. Pretty much all serious hypervisors or legal hypervisors will have this field set to 1. With our blue pill, we didn't have it because blue pill was extremely thin, so we didn't have it set. So we had to set it to 1, which is a bit tricky because we need to make sure to set the VTPR register to the current host CR8 register. And then whenever we clear it, we need to set it back. And once we set it, we clear the interrupt flag in AirFlags for the host. And then we also manually start intercepting NMI, SMI, init, and debug exception, and either held it pending or discarded until we stop the emulation. This is basically why I chose those events, because in AMD manual it says that GIF is pretty much IF0 plus this. After we implemented it, the VPC stopped crashing when it was running as our nested guest. However, well, immediately, stopped crashing immediately. It started crashing after some time. Oh, there are some additional details that I didn't mention, like VM load, VM safe emulation, that I don't want to go into details of this right now. We also need to virtualize VM HSafe P8. This is another story. This is pretty simple. However, one interesting thing I want to mention also is the ACID conflicts. And this is the picture. So we have the hypervisor. Oh, the ACID. Address space ID. It's an interesting feature of AMD processors. So every virtual machine gets its own ID. Address space ID. The hypervisor gets ACID 0, and all the other machines ACID 1, 2, 3, etc. This is used to avoid TLB flashing on VM exits, because every entry in TLB is tagged with an ACID identifier. This is called tagged TLB. Thanks to this, whenever we have VM exit, the processor does not have to flash the TLB. The processor only needs to know to use TLB entries that have the matching ACID with the current ACID. This is very good thinking, AMD. And this feature is also coming on future on future Intel processors. So let's look at the situation with ASICs we have right now with our nested scenario. So we have our blue pill hypervisor having ASIC 0. And then we have nested hypervisor, like virtual PC, for example, that we assigned ASIC 1. We couldn't assign ASIC 0 to it because the processor automatically assigns ASIC 0 to our hypervisor. So we assigned ASIC 1. However, virtual PC believes that it has ASIC 0 because it thinks it is the only hypervisor. And then it creates its own guest, a nested guest, and the virtual PC assigns ASIC 1 to this guest. So now we have a problem because we have three virtual machines, well, one hypervisor and two virtual machines, and they have the same ASIC. And as I said, after a few minutes, you can observe some suspicious or weird crashes. Because obviously sometimes there will be a conflict, there will be two TLB entries for the same physical address, same virtual address, but for two different virtual machines. So how do we solve it? Very easily, because we can rewrite ASIC that was assigned by the hypervisor, by the nested hypervisor. Because as I said, we do this VMCB1 to VMCB1 prim, we rewrite it. So ASIC field, which is in VMCB, should be rewritten. Another example of things that should be rewritten here. Performance impact. So after we implemented it, this started working. Performance impact is this. On every VM exit that would normally occur, from, for example, virtual PC guest to virtual PC, we introduce one more. And also one additional VM exit when the nested hypervisor executes STGI, CLGI, so set or clear GIF, VM load VM save. Thanks to target TLB, this is not really, it's not big impact. And there's also a lot of space for optimization here. Don't worry if you get lost. I just wanted to show you that there's really no magic in doing this. It can be done, could be understood. So the main message of this is this can be done and it works. And this is the picture. So this is Vista. What I'm doing here in this window, I'm loading a new bp.sys module, which is our blue pill. So starting from this moment, when it got loaded, this whole system got virtualized. So we have blue pill running on top of it, and this whole system is virtualized. And you see that I use bpknock, a simple knocking program to send a magic knock and get a magic answer just to make sure that the blue pill indeed was loaded. And then I have started a virtual PC, and this virtual PC created Windows XP guest. And inside this Windows XP guest, I run the bpknock again just to make sure that the blue pill hypervisor can still see this guest and intercept events in this guest. As you can see, the magic answer was obtained here. So again, blue pill around it, Vista, virtual PC with hardware-based virtualization enabled. This is important to note. And Windows XP, the guest of virtual PC, and this all works. And you can get the whole source code for doing this from bluepillproject.org, and you can try it at home. This is the address. Okay, VTX. We also have implemented it on VTX. On VTX, there is no GIF bit, so no emulation necessary. There's also no target TLB, which means no ASIC configs, however, also means poorer performance. However, there are some other problems. For example, VMX instructions, the virtualization instructions for VTX, can take memory operands, and we need to use a complex memory operand parser to know where is the VMCS. VMCS is pretty much the same as VMCB on AMD. As I said, not like a TLB, potentially bigger performance impact. We have that working. Unfortunately, we cannot make this code publicly available. And just because this research has been sponsored by Phoenix and they allowed us to do to publish the AMD code, but not Intel code. So, who asked us? Nested hardware-based virtualization. Well, unfortunately, we were not the first ones in the solar system to do this, and IBM with their system Z mainframe was before us, and they have this ZVM hypervisor. And in the white paper, you can read this: running ZVM in a virtual machine, that is ZVM as a guest of a ZVM, also known as a second level ZVM, is functionally supported but intended only for testing. Apparently you can buy one of this thing for some $1 million or something. Of course, it's completely different architecture. It has nothing to do with AMD SVM or Intel VTX. It's a completely different thing, but also an example of nested virtualization. By the way, there was a confusion because AMD released those new Opteron processors like 6 months ago, which had this nested page tables feature, but nested page tables has nothing to do with nested virtualization. Nested page tables is just a name for hardware-based shadow page tables, which is a good thing, very, by the way. Right now, nested page tables was renamed to Rapid Virtualization Index. Okay. No way. Okay, so some security implications. So imagine we have this hypervisor and a few virtual machines. Type 1 hypervisor could be Xen, could be ESX. Well, ESX not really, because ESX is not really hardware-based. So imagine that we escaped somehow from VM1 to domain 0. And then from this domain 0, we modify master boot record in order to load our blue pill upon boot. And then the blue pill would emulate the rest of the boot environment for the type 1 hypervisor, for the like Xen maybe hypervisor a loader. And we got to this picture, which would mean that we would have a virtualized based system running some type 1 hypervisor with virtual machines with blue pill running on top of it. So let's get back to this discussion I started with. What is detecting this blue pill detection? So imagine we, in one of those domains, maybe even in domain 0, administrator would like to detect blue pill. So imagine that administrator would use one of those blue pill detectors that maybe would do some tricky TLB profiling. They would use some sophisticated tricks and eventually they would come up with an answer. Dear user, you are virtualized. And the user would say, yes, of course I am, because I am under Xen. But the point is, maybe there is something even above us. So some of you might say, okay, so why not to move the detector from here to the type 1 hypervisor? Just like current antivirus products have kernel components, kernel drivers, and do rootkit detection from kernel. If we allowed to do this, that would be the failure of this whole virtualization idea. Because the goal here is to make this hypervisor very small and simple, and God forbid, never allow any third-party modules to load into hypervisor. If we allowed, for example, antivirus people to get their code into hypervisors, that would really be a failure of the industry. Just look 2-3 years back and see how many bugs antivirus components introduced to kernels by having the kernel components there. A lot. So we don't want to repeat this in hypervisors. So no, not third-party modules, not third-party detectors in type 1 hypervisor. Solution to this problem is to use SRTM or DRTM, static root of trust or dynamic root of trust, that uses also TPM to do this measurement. So in that case, of course, if we modified MBR to load blue pill, even though the blue pill would load successfully, the blue pill could not start the rest of the system because the rest of the system would be encrypted. And the only way to decrypt it would be to get key from TPM, and on the only one, the only way to get key from the key from the TPM would be to provide TPM with correct measurements starting from the boot process that we couldn't do because we just modified it. So this is the solution to the previous scenario. But still, imagine this. Imagine now that we have a bug in a hypervisor and we are exploiting it on the fly. And from within the hypervisor, we install blue pill on the fly. Just like today, just like 2 years ago, I showed the blue pill could be installed on the fly on Vista after we exploited some bugs in Vista kernel. The same situation here. Maybe using one of those bugs I mentioned half an hour ago, or maybe some others. Well, in that case, SRTM, DRTM do not change anything, because they only protected the hypervisor when it was being loaded at the very beginning of boot process. What happens with the hypervisor later? It's really not SRTM, DRTM business. So the message is, keep hypervisors very slim. Do not put drivers there or antivirus components. Useful applications, as I said at the beginning, some one reason to look into nested virtualization is to help people like Phoenix to support this embedded virtualization support. So now having this nested virtualization, even if we bought this machine with HyperCore enabled, we still would be able to run virtualization based applications inside this Vista, for example. And I should mention that Phoenix Technologies supported the research on nested hypervisors since fall. So that was the three things I was talking about today. So let's do some summary. I believe that virtualization could be used to improve security on desktop systems. However, there are some non-trivial challenges there. That we should address to make sure that this whole new thing would make some sense and that we not get back to the very same point where we are right now with our current operating systems. For example, we should keep hypervisors small, not put drivers there, not put antiviruses there. Virtualization is an interesting topic for researchers. And there's also some new stuff coming at Black Hat Vegas in August. And this is my company. And thank you very much.